Brett Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show with Dr. David Wynn Miller, Part 2. Sorry we had to get cut short last week. We're going to make up for it tonight. Also, I apologize for the video link missing because I know a lot of you like that. So you could probably go over to my website, www.pyradyne.com, and probably pick up the video link over there. Tonight, we're going to go further into this discussion with Judge Miller. We're going to talk right about the weather control and some of the other things that he knows about and the timing with the political events, which I think is an exciting topic. And I also want to thank the audience out there for making this probably one of the most listened to shows on the Internet and on the airwaves today. So, Judge Miller, are you there? Well, we're having a restart here. I apologize, but that's, I guess you'd call that rock and roll radio tonight. Anyhow, Judge Miller is on the line this time. How are you doing, Judge Miller? And I understand you're having a good Father's Day along with me here.
Yes, I am. I'm spending with my children.
Where are you at anyway? Up there in Wisconsin?
Yes, I am in central Wisconsin tonight. We had a little rain here earlier, but otherwise it's nice and cool here, about 72.
Oh, great. It's probably about 75 out here in California. So anyhow, we had a great week, you know, reiterating on last week, we covered a lot of subjects. We covered your subject with President Clinton and wording about what is, and we covered so many subjects I couldn't even go into them all, but I wanted to continue on. We were just, after the show, we were talking about the new, you know, the political events and weather control, and you were starting to tell me all kinds of information. And hearing about weather control from a judge made me realize that, yes, because we didn't talk about you working in Japan with the Tesla energy going over there and all the scientific. I forgot to bring up or didn't have a chance to bring up the fact that you're sort of a scientist also, so you have a kind of a dual background.
It's been a hobby of mine for, you know, since I was a teenager.
Yeah, so you probably know more than 4 or 5 PhDs.
Well, no, the Tesla programs are up on the Internet for people that want to study about it. Just get on Nikola Tesla, and you can do research for the coils themselves. But I was explaining to Ito, he's the ambassador to the United States from Japan. We had 4 different meetings at the United Nations. The Nikola Tesla coil, if it's 5,000 feet in diameter, will power create enough electricity for 160 million people, which is the population of Japan. One of the secrets to building the coil is the diameter must be elevated 7 times higher than its diameter. So if it's 5,000 feet in diameter, it must be 35,000 feet above the Earth's crust. Well, off of Japan, they just happen to have a trench 35,000 feet deep. So they could build a coil 5,000 feet across and floated on a barge over the trench and power the entire island of the nation of Japan with one coil. That would account for all their electricity, electric automobiles with Alti, A-L-T-I. It's a company that developed a lithium titanium oxide battery. It weighs 1/2 of a car battery and gets 10 times the amperage, and it can be recharged in 6 minutes.
That's a titanium oxide battery.
Yes.
Very interesting.
They developed it in October of 2005. And on Wednesday last week, the doctor who developed this technology addressed the Senate on the use of this titanium oxide battery for independent energy here in the United States. That if the automobile companies were to adapt this new battery, they would have an automobile that had a 200 electric cars that would have a 200 mile cruise range with a 6 minute recharge capacity, and that recharge stations could be established all across the United States, just like we have gas stations today. However, if you installed a solar cell on top of the automobile, it would be very rare, unless you're taking a long trip, that you'd ever have to plug it in. It would be virtually an independently operated automobile.
I do know
the high rate of recharge with the type of battery it is with solar cells.
Yeah, I know solar cell research has come a long way. They get quite a few watts per square inch, and I've seen a couple of these colleges put these vehicles and go coast to coast running these things totally on the sun all day long and batteries at night. So So technology, I know, is here. You think it'll be? I'm sure it'll be in Japan way before it is in the United States. Would that be your feeling too?
Well, yes, it would be, because if you look last year, the price of copper was 90 cents a pound. Now it's $3.50 a pound. Somebody's buying up the copper, and you need the copper to build the coils, produce the electricity. So it's either China or Japan are doing a serious purchasing on the world market enough to drive prices up. And I believe that the only thing that they would cause that to take place is to build one of these coils.
Yeah, so you think they're importing enough copper now to do that then?
Right. You know, we got our Kennecott copper mine here in the United States, which is a huge producer of copper. And
well, 5,000 feet of copper is really not that much. What diameter is the wire, anyway?
I don't know that. It's a multi-layer coil, but the coil itself has to be 5,000 feet around.
Oh, okay. I get it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's
the coil.
I got it.
That's still not an undoable deal. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, that's...
Now, you could...
diameter is over a quarter mile. Yeah.
150 feet across in Lake Michigan, because Lake Michigan is 920 feet deep.
Yeah.
And that would be enough electricity to power the cities of Chicago, Milwaukee, to put another one like Huron for Detroit, one off of the eastern seaboard and run New York City, Philadelphia, Boston, because they got 15,000 feet of water off of the Atlantic seaboard. Same thing off the Pacific. You could run one coil off of L.A., one off of San Francisco, and power the whole state of California.
Yeah, oh, that's really good. I remember that one he built at Long Island in New York. That was a pretty good-sized coil. That would have powered New York pretty good.
That was that coil that Nikola Tesla actually built was only like 30 feet around, and 15 miles away, it would light a light bulb up if you put it in the ground.
Yeah, I heard about that. Now, that's really...
You know, the coil itself runs on a 44,000 cycle per second electromagnetic pulse from the Milky Way galaxy, which we are bombarded with 24 hours a day. And the only thing you need to do is create a coil, and then you step it down, of course, into a 60 hertz load capacity, and then you can harness the electricity off of it.
Yeah.
No moving parts.
I know for a fact that J. Pierpont Morgan shut him down, you know, when he went with George Westinghouse instead, back when they had a, you know, meeting of the minds, when they realized that Tesla, once you install a Tesla device in your house, there would be no power meter, nothing, a one-time installation, and you're all done. That didn't go over too well.
Well, his remark was, there's no place to put a meter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, that's amazing. And so tell me a little bit about the, the other thing is levitation devices, too. You know, that Earth Resonant Generator stuff, which is like about 8.2 hertz, also...
I haven't done any research on that yet.
When he died, the War Department got all his files. And he died in room 3408 in the New Yorker Hotel in New York City. And I used to stay in that room because I knew what room it was. Now they tore that room out. Back when I did the shows, I used to spend a lot of time in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s in New York doing shows back there, trade shows and New Age shows. And I always stayed in his room. And it was really a beautiful room that he died in. And that now, though, I just called back there to book some reservations for the fall, and they said that whole suite... series of suites have been tore out. They put something else in. So I mean, he actually died. It was in 1947 or something in that room, and it was real interesting. So anyway, let's talk about. Remember, you were telling me after the show last week, we started talking about weather control and Katrina and all of these things, and then the political dates and how things are inaugurated. Could you go into that a little bit?
Well, I believe that you know, as far as a hurricane goes, those are created by the global warming. But they used to, and this is going back to 1993, in the Aleutian Sound off of Alaska, there used to be low-pressure systems that would be created. They were roughly 2,300 miles across. And a low-pressure system up there takes the jet stream and bends it from the equator and pulls it up over the United States, bringing warm air from the Gulf. And this went on for in the years of 93, 94, and 95. price of oil at this time was trading in the $10 and $11 a barrel range because we had very mild winters. Now, at the same time that these low pressure systems were artificially being created in the Aleutian Sound, that elevation and temperature raised the North American to the plate of the North American continent, as well as bringing El Nino out of the central Pacific up against California. In 96, 97, and 98, after our oil reservoirs were full, they turned the temperature down. In other words, shut down these low-pressure systems and created high-pressure systems, which brought in the Arctic air from the North Pole. Now the price of oil jumps up in the $30 barrel.
Exactly, so and home heating went way up. That's what they played on in the wintertime when they lowered the gas prices.
Well, then after they pumped out some of the reservoirs that in the $30 barrel, then they went ahead and they turned it back on again and put low pressure up there and brought the jet stream back up again, warming it back up in 98, 99. And when they inadvertently warmed up the North American plate and had El Nino against the Pacific plate, well, what happens when two plates get hot? Well, they expand. If they expand, they're going to have an earthquake, a very larger earthquake along the San Andreas. So, and there's a lot of people that can go back and check the history for 10 years, from 1989 until 1999, the weather patterns of how they circled around planet Earth. I was a weatherman in the Air Force back in 1969. And when I saw these patterns, I said, these are not natural.
Yeah.
These are man-made. Now, there's a unit called a HARP, High Amplification Array Radiation Pulse, and it's a laser cannon located about 36,000 miles out over the Pacific in a fixed orbit, so that they can shoot a low-energy laser beam into the atmosphere and create a low or high pressure system based on how they cause this laser to heat up the atmosphere. And when they had heated up these two plates, and I was doing a seminar in Sacramento, California at the time. We had a couple of FBI agents at our seminar because I was talking about language at the time in that seminar. But I was asked a question, so I explained about how the HARP program worked, and they immediately went back to the government. Well, I got a call from them, and I explained to them about, if you check the deep oil wells that are 15,000, 18,000 feet deep along the San Andreas, you'll find out that your temperatures are accelerating down below because there's pressure building. Because it's both Pacific and plate and the North American plates were heating up. Well, when they realized that these plates were getting hot and they realized that there was a condition forming, I said, you're going to have to drop the temperature in Wisconsin below freezing. It went 25 below zero from 75 degrees. And into Austin, Texas, it was 88 degrees, and they took it down to 25 degrees. And then they had to change the wind flow, which was coming from the west, moving east over the Yucatan Peninsula. They had to change the wind to blow from the east to the west at 50 miles an hour for 22 days. And if you look at the history of our wind flow pattern back in 1999, you'll see that at the same time that the temperature dramatically dropped roughly 75 to 100 degrees in the North American plate for 22 days, the wind also changed, blowing from east to west and pushing El Nino out back into the Pacific, henceforth bringing cold water into the Pacific plate and then cooling everything down, respectively, and the pressure was reduced on the San Andreas, and the earthquake never took place. Now, people who doubt that, hearing this story, and I can go back, you know, go down to your local libraries, and they can look at weather patterns over the 10 years, and they can see this for a fact. And, you know, weather's been pretty decent lately, but our emissions, our greenhouse effect has been increasing since 1970. 20% of the North Pole ice cap has melted, And in 2 years, Russia will have a 100% free port surrounding the water port, free of ice.
I think that Florida will probably be underwater.
Pardon?
Part of Florida will be underwater.
Well, they already have problems with flooding.
Yeah, they
everybody.
Do.
You know, last week when we were talking about the World Trade Center, about its collapse.
Yeah.
And that's when we got cut off.
Right, I remember that. Very interesting.
When I was explaining about the World Trade Center, the World Trade Center is 1,300 feet tall for the top of the tower. Now, the rate of acceleration is 33, 66, 99, 120, 29, and so on. In other words, it's 33 feet per second. So if an object fell from the top of the World Trade Center, it would take exactly 12 seconds, roughly, to hit the ground. The World Trade Center fell down in 4.8 seconds.
Yeah,
now, at no time during the World Trade Center investigations as to what happened, no one had ever looked at the physics of the rate of falling. It was never published. I mean, there millions of people recorded the collapse. Nobody sat there with a stopwatch and actually timed the speed to which this fell down. There were many people who wrote, there was a fellow who wrote a book about this, about the falling down of the, but he didn't in any place in his book talk about the coefficient of expansions of steel, glass, and concrete. All have a coefficient of expansion of 6.3. Now there's two things in the world that can change gravity. One is an atomic explosion, either hydrogen or nuclear. And the second thing is C4 plastic. A C4 plastic, when it detonates, produces an electromagnetic pulse. And it only affects one molecule, a molecule of 6.3. So when the plastic is affected by 6.3 during detonation, it affects the concrete, steel, and glass molecule of 6.3 with an electromagnetic pulse that degenerates, causes a bubble to be formed 1,300 feet across. Well, the eight buildings that surround the World Trade Center were also caught in this electromagnetic bubble, and they all collapsed under their own weight because the electromagnetic bonding that holds atoms together is what was destabilized, bringing the building down when the bubble collapsed in 4.8 seconds, along with the buildings that surrounded it that weren't hit by planes, were not on fire, but they also collapsed.
Yeah, a lot of windows went out everywhere from some kind of pressure.
Within a half a mile of the World Trade Center, windows were blasted out. And that's
right, which a jet running into a plane, hello, would not cause.
Remember when the fireman who was in the building had taken those videos and he turned them over to CNN, they put them out without the government knowing about it. And it
I very much remember that.
And the firemen were caught on TV saying, there's explosions, and then we lost the signal and the program was canceled. CNN went off the air because the government didn't want anybody looking at the secondary explosions that were taking place in the building.
And there's also a janitor in the basement that talked about it. He was downstairs when one went off.
Now, it was just announced today that people all over New York City are sick from the asbestos that came off of the World Trade Center.
Wow. I even think that that group, the Widows of New York, you know, the widows of the people that died, they're even demanding some kind of an investigation now into the collapse of the World Trade Center. I think they even have finally woke up to the fact that something was really strange.
Well, there was a lady who had contacted me. Her husband had died in the World Trade Center. So I wrote a Title 42 lawsuit for her based on the fraudulent conveyance of language from the government under wrongful death. And I did it in my quantum language on my DWMLC.com website. And the result from that one lawsuit was they disqualified the 3,800 other lawsuits that were written in adverb verb by the attorneys because there is no, you can't have a wrongful death of a dead person who writes their name in nom de guerre and then makes an argument in adverb verb which says nothing. So they were able, the government was able to save $1 trillion in wrongful death damages as a result of the World Trade Center collapse by applying the rules that you didn't sue us with the correct language and in vacating all those cases. Now the 3,800 people that had brought these lawsuits don't know how to read. They don't know about my technology.
Right.
It takes time to learn about in the truth language because people have been brainwashed to read and write an adverb verb or adverb adjective pronoun or pronoun adverb verb. So the government is now using this technology to protect themselves from anyone suing them. Because the people can't read and write, the English teachers, the universities, the colleges, they don't teach English in school. They don't teach people about prepositional phrases or the deductive reasoning of how to write a correct sentence. All of these things I teach on my website, as well on my videotapes and books that I offer.
I want to come to your seminar. I told you I can't wait. Now, you do seminars all around the country, right? Is that correct?
I've done 331 seminars around the United States in 17 countries, but I haven't done any for several years now. I have everything on videotape. It's like the seminar on videotape, which we did it off of a script. We took the best of all the materials and we put it into a 20-hour seminar. And then I have my workbook. So that information is up on my website. So if people want to order that information and learn about how to correctly read and write, you know, the Bible teaches you the truth will set you free, but when you learn how to read and write in the truth, you're going to find out that the fiction doesn't want anything to do with you.
Exactly. Yeah, what I'm going to do is for the listeners out there, I'm going to put Judge Miller's website up permanently on my page, my BBS radio page, so that even though this show will be over with, they'll be able to go to that and click over to your website, because I think that you're one of those people that I think really brings an important message. And I like it because you're not biased. You just put the truth out there, and if the government uses it, the people use it, that's honorable. You know, you're not taking sides, which is what a judge should do.
I'm a man that looks at the deductive reasoning of an argument. And
yeah.
If a person brings an argument to me with the wrong language, of course they're going to get the wrong result.
Right.
And I have 245,000 linked websites to my website and over 200 million students worldwide.
I know you got a lot of students. Awesome.
It's something where the government says is nonsense, okay, which means makes no sense. However, the government, which has established itself in an adverb-verb scenario, which is actually the court. Now, here's a little secret for you. You're out in California.
Right.
When you walk into a courthouse in California, the courthouse is a vessel in dry dock.
Right.
Okay, now, in the courthouse, the courthouse is going to say State of California. State is a pronoun, of is an adverb, modifying the verb California. So that is a verb of California courthouse. Everything that is spoken in the verb of California courthouse is adverb verb or pronoun adverb verb. Their lawsuits are written in adverb verb. The Constitution of the United States was written in adverb verb by Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson. The Declaration of Independence was written by Benjamin Franklin. It's always an adverb modifying a declare. D-E means no and clare means speak. So it's no speak. Of is an adverb making independence. In means no, D means no, pendence means right. So if you're going to have a no-no-speak, no-no-right contract, and then the United States, when the Continental Congress didn't want to go to war with England, who did they send back to England to negotiate a peace treaty? Well, the triple agent, Benjamin Franklin, who comes back and says,
right.
No, we got to go ahead, we got to have our little fight.
Right.
So 1776 rolls around. And the war goes on until 1782. And in 1782, the United States has to file bankruptcy domestically against France because it can't pay back the loan that they made from the French here in the United States. But a domestic bankruptcy is only 7 years, and 7 years later, from 1782 to 1789, on September 17, 1789, the Declaration of Independence was signed. And now the Bank of England, which now creates an international bankruptcy, now starts our 70-year international bankruptcy with England. That expires in 1859, and in 1859, when that ends, the South says we're not going to finance the North, succeeds from the United States. So the United States goes ahead and they go back to England and says, well, we will renew the bankruptcy. We will then conquer the South and pay back the debt with the gold, silver, tobacco, and cotton. Except the war lasts 6 years, bankrupts the North and the South, and the North captures the South through collusion, which is Title 28, Section 1359. Now, when you enter into a contract to end the war through collusion, which means you got a gun to your head,
right,
the contract is not valid. That's why when I did a seminar in Georgia and explained that Georgia is, all the southern states are still free states, independent territories, and if they want to use the Confederate flag, that's their independent territorial right. They hoisted the flag up over the Capitol, and you know what? The United States government couldn't do anything about it because they'd never had a contract written in quantum language to capture the South. So the war went, the international bankruptcy of 1859 runs for 70 years to 1929. Now, September 17th, 1929, the United States tells England, well, we're not going to renew the bankruptcy. So England says, well, you've got 45 days to reconsider. But on November 2nd, which is our presidential election day, which is exactly 45 days after the trust is vacated, the trust then ends. So on the last day, the 45th day, that's when we elect a new president. So England says, well, okay, you're not going to renew the bankruptcy on November 2nd. We have to give the world, the banks and the credit unions and American people, a five-day notice. So England, Bank of England, announces on October 29, 1929, that's under the five-day rule, that on November 2nd, 1929, they're going to close the banks and credit unions. And, of course, we have to run on the bank and the stock market crashes. And the United States loses confidence in our banking system. So the Great Depression takes place. Well, this goes on for another 70 years until November 2nd, 1999. On November 2nd, 1999, we do not elect a new president that day. George Bush is still in office, of course, but the third bankruptcy of the United States now officially ends on November 2nd, Fascicawean. Gold coins are issued, and because she was a postmaster, and so she was put on the $1 gold coin to represent the gold standard of a new United States of America corporation. Now, the United States of America corporation does not become legal for 90 days under federal law. So to keep the government functioning and keep everybody busy, we pretend for the next 90 days and have everybody count ballots. And there's arguments taking place all over CNN and Fox News and all your...
That was a big fiasco.
All it was a magic act. Watch the left hand while the right hand picks your pocket.
Right.
For 90 days, the whole world is watching this count ballots. And on February 2nd, 2000, Bush is then appointed with 47% of the vote as the next president of the United States Corporation. And all 50 states now become independent territories. And the only thing that joins the independent territories called the United States with on the country called America is banking, which is commerce through paper money, which is controlled by the post office, which is responsible for bills of lading and scrip. Scrip meaning money. So under bills of lading, commerce has to flow, so people are fed, and we have our energy and our transportation. So the post office controls the Department of Transportation, port authorities, and all vessels and dry dock, which is every building in the United States. So the treaty that exists between all 50 states is no more than a banking treaty for commerce. But each state is independent, has its own independent constitution. Now, living in the state of California, state is a pronoun, of as an adverb modifying the verb California. Well, if that's what it says in the courthouse, it says in the government building, but in the fact, it's the territory, it's California territory, or the territory of the California as a fact. If an issue takes place and you're a citizen of the California fact, and you leave the California fact, which is a noun, and you walk into the verb California, which is your courthouse, you've left your jurisdiction, and now you're in a vessel in dry dock of an alien country.
That's very good information.
One of the laws in our country is most states will create a state within a state. Now, within a state is a prepositional phrase making state a noun as a condition of. And when they create a state, create being a pronoun, a being an adverb, modifying the verb state. So the verb California courthouse cannot exist within the noun California fact. But they're saying, well, if California is a verb in the courthouse, it's fiction. Therefore, it never exists. If people want to enter our vessel in dry dock and volunteer to pay us money and have us give them three hops and a cot and go to our jails, well, so be it. I mean, we haven't broken any laws. But then if they say come to court, you don't come to court, you don't leave your noun California and you walk into the verb California, what do they do? They go out and they Shanghai you.
Exactly. Interesting.
So now you've got a situation. So we asked the court, well, will you go into the truth and avoid perjury, avoid the fictitious conveyance of language? Will you be the noun in the state of the California hyphen territory and now establish your vessel of your building, you're in your dry dock, as a unit in the state of the California or in the state of the territory California? And they say, no, we can't understand you. We can't understand the fact.
Right.
Every time you ask them that question, you...
So, I don't understand. So what do you do now?
We're 38 of us, and we walked into a courtroom and said, Judge, we have a question for you. The judge says, all right, ask your question. He says, do you understand the phrase, the truth? The judge says, yes, I do. And he says, what does that mean? He says, well, does an adverb modifying the verb truth. And he says, do you understand the phrase, for the truth, of the truth, by the truth, or with the truth? And the judge says, I can't understand you. He says, well, it's a preposition, article, and a noun. It's a fact. Truth is now created as a fact through a prepositional phrase. He says, I can't understand what you're saying. He says, I know that the truth is a verb. He says, but I can't understand it as a fact. So I says, but if you say it's a verb, it's fiction. If you only understand truth as a fiction, then that's a lie. That's perjury. Well, I can't understand that. He says, I only can understand that everything is a verb here. Because as a verb, as long as we're pretending, we're not liable for anything.
Well, there's no perjury.
Right, you can't be perjured for pretending.
But why didn't Martha Stewart do that?
Well, if Martha Stewart had to confess she can't read and write as a great lady.
Okay.
So she's caught between a hard place and a rock. If she goes ahead and she makes the statement, ask me the question and the truth, and I'll give you a truthful answer, the district attorney's office has no question for her.
Oh.
So because they asked it an adverb verb, and her lawyer, she says, well, I won't answer that. So she hires a lawyer, and the lawyer is licensed to answer an adverb verb and write all the documents in adverb verb. I corrected Martha Stewart's law brief that their lawyers wrote. I got a copy of it.
Yeah.
And you know, there was not one legal sentence, not one prepositional phrase in the entire pleading that her lawyer did for her. They committed, the lawyers committed perjury against the court and hoodwinked Martha Stewart, who never said one word in the entire time of her trial, so she never participated in any fiction.
She paid a high price for fragrance.
Martha Stewart now is entitled to roughly an $800 million lawsuit based on the information that I have on her case against the United States government, and her attorneys are liable for four times the damages that they charged her to represent that case. Under Sanders versus English, 950 Fed Second, she's entitled to $1.6 million a day for every day she's spent in jail, which is about $800 million worth of damages.
Is she going to do something about that?
Well, I've contacted her office and made this information available to her, and she hasn't done anything about it. So, you know, it's her call. I can't interfere with individuals if they don't wish to participate.
Yeah, I had to bring that up. Sorry to interrupt your flow on California.
And anybody that wants to, people that need the help can ask me to help, then I will help. But I'm not going to go out knocking anybody's door and force them to learn how to read and write the truth.
Yeah.
That's their freedom of choice.
Yeah. Well, go ahead and explain more about California, because I live out here. I've got some judges I'm going to go see and have some fun with them, you know. Not over a case. I just want to talk to them and see how ignorant they are. You know, I'm not quite
okay.
ready to do
now,
that.
Okay, now, let's see the IRS. I want you to go. The Internal Revenue Service. In means no. Internal, T-E-R, means terra, and null means contract. No earth contract. And then the word revenue. Re means null, and venue means jurisdiction. So you have no earth contract, no jurisdiction service. Because the entire Internal Revenue Service codes are written in adverb-verb. There is no prepositional phrases. There are no complete sentences. There are no complete thoughts. Now, anytime you get a form from the Internal Revenue Service, you'll notice that the dollar sign, which is also referred to as the peso, never touches the number. All the numbers are in boxes. The entire Internal Revenue Service forms that are mailed to your houses are in boxes. And
now that makes them not legal, according to my last lesson from you on last week's show. Is that correct?
Right. Anything in a box is an enclosed area and can't be considered.
Okay.
So because
you.
they compartmentalize everything, they go ahead and they divide it up and then they isolate it so there's no continuance of evidence between anything written and any number that's on the page. They also take and they always use more than two character spaces between the dollar sign and what the number is. So that the number, even though it's there, is a presumption of what you owe, but it's not affiliated with the value of dollars, because if you have a no earth contract, no venue, no jurisdiction venue system, then you have no rules and regulations written with correct sentence structures and no oaths on file. You're not a public servant, but a private organization that's trying to get an individual who can't read and write to give you something. You have to be very clever to trick this individual into participating. So now that they're going to go ahead and participate because you can't read and write, and you're going to participate in a fiction, well, they're not responsible for anything. They haven't injured you with any facts. They've made a suggestion. You've come in and you've confessed that you can't, that you want to participate. So some people hear this information and they get as far along as really understanding everything. And the first four words that they say when they walk in front of a judge or walk in front of the IRS agent is, "There is no law." So what did they just say? There is an adverb modifying the verb is. No is an adverb modifying the verb law. But then when they use the word is with an accent, they take is and they turn it into a fact. Because of their volition, they make is a fact. And then they use is no as a compound word. So the is no now because the no becomes a positive.
There's a little Clintonology here too, I might add, right?
Right. If you think about it, you're actually taking the word no and you're turning it into a positive condition of state. The judge says, "Well, I know there is no law. I now hold you in contempt because I don't have any law."
That's almost obvious. Go right. ahead. I didn't
Gus is now saying by your own confession.
Oh. Yeah, go ahead.
Gus told me that no is a fact, so therefore my no oath and my no law and my no language now has jurisdiction to take your no body, which is Nom de Guerre dead, put you in a no land position, which is jail. A no freedom position, which is jail. And by doing nothing, you're totally innocent. You walk in, and plausible deniability is the most obvious of all human responses. You go in and you establish a no condition of state, thereby giving them jurisdiction to put you in jail.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Now, the sentence you should be saying is for the witness's knowledge of the fact. Is with the claim of the damage, with the fictitious conveyance of language by the judge. Now, if you notice, the word judge comes as the last word, or by the DA, because the DA writes the indictment to take you in the court in the first place. And in means null, indictment, which means contract.
Right.
So because the last word in the sentence now becomes judge, he's responsible for everything in front of him. Where do you sign your autograph on a personal check, or an autograph on a document, or a mortgage? At the bottom of the page, because it has jurisdiction for everything in front of it and above it. So if you write a sentence, whosever name ends the sentence is responsible for the condition of the damages within that sentence. And because I write my sentences in quantum language, they're written in a circle. So if you read them backwards, they say the same thing as they did frontwards. The sentence I just read you, for the witness's knowledge of the fact, is with the claim of the damage with the fictitious conveyance of language by the judge. Now, backwards it says, for the judge of the fictitious conveyance of language is with the claim of the damage by the knowledge of the fact of the of the witness.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I'm starting to understand you. You realize that in two shows here, I'm starting to understand what you're saying. I think with a little bit longer, I'll really understand.
Here's a very simple 7-word sentence.
Yeah.
For the bridge is over the river.
Under
the bridge. Over and under are opposite prepositions, and both sentences are the same picture. Frontwards and backwards. Now, in a math problem, 2 plus 3 equals 5, and 5 minus 3 equals 2. 2 times 3 equals 6, and 6 divided by 3 equals 2. 2 equals 2, and 6 equals 6. Whether you're adding, subtracting, multiplying, dividing, the opposite procedure in mathematics is how you check your math to see if you did the problem correctly. If in language, the opposite preposition, writing the sentence backwards, is the secret to checking your sentence structure to see if you wrote the sentence correct the first time going forward. In my technology, you can write, like up on my website, I have the Lord's Prayer written, Our Father who art in heaven. Our is an adverb modifying the verb father. But then our is an adverb modifying the verb father. There's no such thing as a verb father. So we broke that down. We said, what is an hour? Well, we're talking about people, so it's for the people of the Father. And if I read that backwards, it's for the Father of the people.
Interesting. Go ahead. Go do a couple more lines. I love this.
Okay. Our Father, who art? Who is an adverb modifying the verb art? Well, the synonym of art is illusion, which means you, and it's spelled A-R-T.
Exactly, it is.
A vowel and two consonants means no contrast. Illusion, I-L-L, means a vowel and two consonants, which means no contrast. So the procedures of the language, A-E-I-O-U, were the next two letters that come after a vowel when it starts a word, if it's a double consonant, abbreviation, arbitration, attorney, illusion. They all mean no contract. And when you start looking at how many words are written from the law about what no contract is, the entire Bible is written in adverb verb. In Bible, di means two, and able means tales or stories. Two stories. good and evil, right and wrong, truth and fiction. But then if everything in the entire book is written in adverb verb or adverb adjective pronoun or pronoun adverb adjective pronoun, what is the agenda of a language that avoids the prepositional phrase to avoid creation of a fact? You know that all nouns and all words in English language have 900 definitions that we have been able to certify through mathematics, through our quantum language. So if you have two prepositional phrases for the bridges over the river, and you're using, is it for this bridge, is it for my bridge, for your bridge, for our bridge, with this bridge, by this bridge, of this bridge. You see, every time I change the preposition or change the article, I wind up with a different definition for the noun.
Completely different bridge.
So, right. So if I've got six words and two prepositional phrases, I have 81,000 variables to write a correct sentence. Which one is it going to be? If I use a 13-word sentence, I've got 100 million to one variable to write a correct sentence. With my mathematical quantum technology, I can certify the 1 in 100 million certification. In fiction, you're guaranteed that everything is an adverb verb and it's 100% fiction. You'll never get the right answer.
Yeah.
So, therefore, it's perjury. It's fictitious conveyance of language under Title 18, 1001.
So when you file these titles, like 42 of these different numbers, in the court, probably recorder or somebody or the clerk or the secretary goes and looks this up, then they, because I don't think the judge would always do that.
Oh, yes, they do. The judges know exactly what a Title 42 is.
Oh, they do,
Title 18 is, and what a Title 28 is. 28 is procedure. 18 is criminal code.
Okay.
And 42 is civil violation.
Okay. So they know right away where you're going. It's no mystery, and they say, uh-oh, when this starts to happen, we better just stop it right here then.
And we will go ahead and file what's called a Title 42 1986 knowledge, followed by a 1985, which is conspiracy of obstructing the evidence of witnesses, subsection 2, and depriving under subsection 3 the evidence and the witnesses for a creation of RICO, racketeering under Title 18, Section 1961, to create a 1983 personal damage. The government is going to come back and say, you can't sue us for 1983, 1985, 1986. See, what they did is they just reversed the process. Well, first off, the word injury means no jury, which means you can, if you have a negative condition of state, you can't be damaged. So you want to use the word damage, not injury.
Wow,
and if you're bringing the argument of a 1983 damage, show us your obstruction of the evidence of witnesses. Show your deprivation of the evidence of witnesses. Where's your discovery? Where's your covery? Where's your porting? It's not report, the port. A ship comes to port. It doesn't come to report. Re means no of port. You see, all their language is plausible deniability and negative because it's an illusion. Our technology removes all the negative and puts everything in a now time. No prefixes, no suffixes. Everything is in now time. And when you're in now time, you have jurisdiction all the time in now time because everything you do will always be in now time.
Yes, be here now.
Exactly.
Now, I want to ask you something. A lot of times I often tell people, you know, they're a little off-center, not paying attention to what's happening to that moment in time. So how is be here now? Does that work, or is that something wrong with that one, too?
Yeah, be is a pronoun. Here is an adverb making now a verb. Be here now.
What does that
be,
mean?
How can you be in a now verb?
Okay, so that's totally wrong, then.
And be is a pronoun.
Yeah.
And it's be a pro, P-R-O means no, N-O is no, and U-N is no. So a pronoun is no, no, no.
Okay, so why would you say, if you were asking somebody to be in the presence, then, I don't know if that's correct, how would you present that to them verbally? Say, in other words, when you're trying to get the message across, now it becomes a slang, be here now, how would you correctly say that? In other words,
for the witness's knowledge of the fact,
yeah,
with the claim of the now time, locate now time hyphen location,
right,
by the witness. See, now the witness starts the sentence and ends the sentence.
So say now the witness. Is that what you just said? I'm trying to get really on track with this one.
Okay. Now as a witness, is that what you just said?
No. Now as, yeah, is that, no, no. Now, I don't know. I'm confused. You got to straighten me out here. This is a very simple thing, but I know it's got great depth. I'm trying to explain to someone, I want them to be in the present, to account for them, for their actions.
Oh, you want now time. You don't want present time. PRE means no absent, which is contract, no contract time.
Okay.
See, they gave you three options. You could be in past time, you could be in present time, or you could be in future time. Well, future time hasn't happened, so that doesn't exist.
Right.
Present time means no contract time, and past time is not in now time, so therefore the damage has passed. It's no longer a threat.
Okay, so how would you say?
So they gave you three options of nothing.
Okay.
You would want to use the term for the now time jurisdiction.
So
and you
would
put
now
hyphen time hyphen jurisdiction. And you got to put hyphens between your words because the hyphens join the words together as compound nouns.
Oh,
in 1834, Congress passed a law that said all compound names of the state of the union must be hyphenated, like North hyphen Carolina, South hyphen Carolina.
Interesting. So the correct thing would be for the now.
For the now hyphen time.
I like that. For the now hyphen time.
See, my name is David hyphen Wynn Folk Colin Miller.
I saw that.
And I punctuated because David Wynn is a compound given name by my parents. The Folk Colin is of the Miller family. If I were to read it backwards, it's for the Miller family by the David Wynn.
Interesting. So I remember names, last surnames, always came from the province or county or state or something of where people's families originated in the original naming of names worldwide.
Right. The family tree would be brought out by the last name, and then the given names would be followed up because there were so many variables.
Right. Very interesting. Very interesting. I'm glad that we are getting the English language finally covered somewhere.
When I did, it took me 3 years just to find the math interface on language.
Yeah.
That was quite accident. Now, you've used yellow line paper and white line paper with that little line, the red line that's one quarter.
In the margin, yeah.
Okay, for 3 years I ran and I did every math problem I could possibly find and I tried to interface it with language and I kept coming stump, stump, stump. Well, on April 6th, in 1988, I went ahead, I got up in the morning to make my coffee, and I wrote 1 plus 2 equals 3, and I wrote it on the red line.
Yeah.
And when I wrote 1 plus 2 equals 3, 3 minus 2 equals 1, and I wrote it on the red line, putting one letter, or rather one number on each line, then I went and got my coffee, I sat down, and I looked at what I wrote, and I said, hey, I just made a graph. Supposing we take and we put the value, we assign values to each one of the numbers. So I says, well, it was a 1 on one side of the formula and 1 on the other side of the formula. It was 3 on one side of the formula and 3 on the other side. Well, a fact is always a fact, going in as well as coming out. A fact should never be changed. If a fact caused an accident and a fact is going to be brought to court as a damage, then the fact should be what's on trial and be the argument so that you would have a factual conclusion at the end of that argument.
Right, rather than an injury, a fact causing an injury, which is incorrect.
Right, an injury means no damage.
Yeah, I got that. I'm starting to, this is really interesting. Very good.
Because how do you spell injury? I-N-J, a vowel and two consonants, no contract.
Yeah.
So then, when I put the values to it, the difference between the one side of the formula and the other side of the formula was plus and minus. I'm going, well, those are the opposite procedures in mathematics. That means the preposition has to be assigned to the opposite. If you want to write the sentence backwards, you have to use the opposite preposition. For the bridge is over the river. For the river is under the bridge. Over and under are opposite prepositions, and both sentences say the same thing. If it's true for one, it's true for all prepositions. It's true for all facts. Because truth there's only one truth. One is the least common denominator. So I was able to find the least common denominator of communication through the preposition and then certify the math interface and language, giving me the world patent in all 5,000 languages on the math interface on language. And that has been, well, it's been 17 years now. And all the language professors and all the geeks and 200-300 IQ people all around the planet that have tried to disqualify it have certified it. And so I enjoy the world patents with the certification by all these people on the planet. And yet, when you walk into the fiction court, the verb court, the vessel in dry dock, they can't understand it. Because you just disqualified everything that they ever did since the beginning of written words, 8,500 years of fraud by the court system.
Now, that makes sense. Because usually, you know, it's usually a government and a monopoly, you know, overpowering the truth over some individual. Is the English language one of the worst ones for these kinds of imperfections, or are they all pretty screwed up?
No, all 5,000 of them are screwed up. Here's another little secret for you. The G is actually a D. It's endlish. End meaning is the synonym of no. It's no language. English is no language because it's adverb-verb practiced worldwide. Do you remember a few years back in that when the President of the United States stood up and says, we're going to come out with new phraseologies to streamline the government and make things easier so we don't have to print so many things? That was about like 7-8 years ago.
George Bush Sr.
Yeah, and guess what he did? He took all the prepositional phrases that were still in the system, and he took them out and made them adverb-verb. Totally, to absolutely, totally screw the American people and screw the American public. You know, when my daughter was in high school, she stood up in class and she says, teacher, when are you going to teach prepositional phrases so we learn in the truth language? Teacher says, you're suspended. You're getting you for the class. Get out of my class. So my daughter went to the principal and says, principal says, what are you doing here? And my daughter says to the principal, well, the teacher just suspended me from her class and gave me a U for the course, so I came here for reassignment. He says, what'd she do that for? He says, well, because I asked her to teach prepositional phrases and teach in the truth language because she was teaching adverb-verb fiction. You know who my father is, don't you? The principal goes, yes, I know your father. He paid your tuition in gold coins. He says,
Did you really?
He says, go back to class and send the teacher down. Well, the teacher came back and spent about 10 minutes with the principal and came back to class and apologized to Katie. And she then went on to get an A for the English course that year.
That's too cool. I love it. So you're having a good Father's Day.
Are
you with your daughters now?
Yeah, my daughter's here now.
Oh, that's way cool. Now I have another question. It's a little bit biblical. What about the Tower of Babel and falling down and creating all these languages, just from some kind of a philosophical standpoint, would it be possible for you to shed some light on that from your views?
Well, that's what Babel is. Even all the courts in the world use the word Babel.
Yeah.
Anytime you walk in and you say you know what in the truth means, they say that's Babel because they can't understand it. See, Babel was the creation of 5,000 separate languages, which today we have 5,000 separate languages.
Right.
And, you know, when we grew up, language is something that's taught to us. Even like we're having a conversation right now in English. But when you were 1 year old, if I dropped you off in China, you'd be speaking Chinese today. Or if I dropped you off in Japan, you'd be speaking Japanese today because that's what you were trained.
Exactly. Thinking, dreaming, all of it, you know.
Right. And your whole concept would be completely changed because this is the way you were taught. And when people don't think out, when people think inside the box, they're controlled through brainwashing. When they think outside the box, then they question as to how did I get here and who taught me what. They want to be free thinkers.
You know, one of the things that I've lived some time in Germany, and I've spent a lot of time in California with Spanish-speaking people, and I've, you know, obviously tried to learn both languages, and I find a horrible transposition of meaning in the words when you try to construct a sentence in English and put it in the other two languages, German and Spanish. It just doesn't even come out close.
Okay, my website is written in Spanish, German, Italian, Latin, Spanish, German, French. And you can log on to the links. And if you're a Spanish-speaking person, I know you have a huge audience down there in Los Angeles that are Spanish. They can log on to my website, and they can read it first in English and then switch over to the Spanish translation and read it in Spanish. And they will see that I use prepositional phrases in Spanish language, that my nouns mean exactly what they mean as a noun in Spanish language, and there is no translation deviation. Then they can switch over to the French and from the Spanish to the French, and they will see no translation deviation, or the German. I had German professors from Germany, from Berlin, call me up, and they were screaming at me, "You can't write that way in German. You're disqualifying the way the German language was created." It was what? You created an adverb verb, and you want to speak fiction?
Germans are like that. That's true.
I said, you've been lying to your students. Learn how to read and write in the truth. Well, that was the last time the German professors ever had contact with me. Because but their students.
Yeah.
From Germany have since discovered my website in the truth, and they've logged on. I've got caller ID from around the world that tells me how many students from each country are logging on, and there's over 1 million minutes a day downloaded off my website.
Wow.
With 30 to 40,000 new students every day discovering and logging on to my website to learn and read it. So there is a transition taking place on this planet where people are asking the question, why is the government lying to us? Why are they creating an adverb-verb environment in the fiction?
Yeah, I love it. That's why are they creating an adverb-verb in fiction?
Right, and that's so they can capture us. So we can't make contracts. Remember, yeah. Nate, I had a talk with a black support group. I says, you remember in 1830 it was a criminal offense to learn how to read and write for blacks.
Oh, I remember that one. I wasn't here, but
right.
I remember.
And you were punished. It was punishable by death.
By death.
And
exactly.
Weren't you being able to create a contract because you could free yourself?
A lot of women tried to teach the blacks and were flogged to death. You know, white women.
And the same thing is true today.
Sorry for the blacks' illiteracy. I know that that's a big part of our history.
The government does not want you to learn how to read and write in quantum language because you will have the capacity to sue the government in the truthful hyphen communication. I write the Title 42 lawsuit to sue judges and attorneys that commit treason against we the people. You know that 95% of all the prisoners of the 3.8 million that are in jail and the 25 million that are on probation are there because they volunteered to put themselves in that position, that they contracted themselves into that position in an adverb-verb contract, that the probation form of the United States prison system uses has 1,400 mistakes on it. They commit that level of mail fraud and fictitious conveyance of language fraud against a citizen and enslave them because they're not smart enough to free themselves and say, show me the law written in the truth or vacate your position.
That's amazing. I believe it, though.
When you put 10% of America under arrest, you've got a serious problem.
Oh, I agree.
It only breeds more problems.
So I totally agree. And we're faulted for having the highest number of prisoners, you know, people in prison in the whole world.
And people that have nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with their lives, they're good parents, they have children and everything. They bust into their house and they arrest them, put them in jail, and they give them a fiction charge. And the minute they charge these private citizens with a fiction charge, the response from them is, there is no law.
Yeah.
They fall right into the negative, the plausible deniability of a negative statement and giving them no law or fact should be tried in court jurisdiction. Bang, they get slammed with a no law. They say, we're going to put you in jail for 100 years. And you get scared and say, but if you sign a contract with us, we won't have to go to trial and we'll only put you in jail for a year. or we'll put you on probation for 5 years and you can pay us a couple hundred dollars a month in probation fees until the probation period is over. But you know that on the last day of probation, we revoke it, throw you in jail for the probation period of 5 years, and you wind up working slave labor for 5 years?
Yeah. So do you, but, you know, there's a lot of prisoners that, you know, they take their own, they become their own attorneys for an appeal. Do you get many of those kinds of people coming to your website to take your courses to work within the system? Do you get those?
Yes.
And what happens? What is the result?
Well, the result is these people can get themselves out of jail.
Have you had some that did that?
Yes, I have had many of them.
That's been really successful
in taking my course, studying, and freeing themselves from jail. Now, here's the trick.
Yeah.
They want you to file an appeal, APP. They want you to file a no contract to forgive them for the damage that they caused you.
Yeah.
You're supposed to file a complaint articulating the fact that you were fraudulently conveyed language to put you in jail as a dead person.
Yeah, I know. I've got that. That's the merit of the system. I agree. Yeah.
As a dead person, now you're property of probate court.
Yeah.
And you have a probate judge taking out a bond on you, and they say, well, here, sign this bail. So you sign a bail, and by signing the bail, you volunteer to become the asset of a certificate because the state is not legal, cannot legally print money. But they can't issue bonds based on physical assets. So they get you to take your body, put it up as collateral as a bond, and if you're going to have a piece of paper out there with value, well, where are you going to put the asset? You're going to lock it up. So you're going to take the person and lock him in a jail cell now because you got a bond on him.
Yeah, exactly. You're preserving.
The jail cell is no more than a vault.
It's property.
Right, it's property.
Yeah.
And how do you spell property? P-R-O, which means no.
Yeah, P-R-O.
Or property means no contract.
Pro means...
The word is security. See, every word that you have a negative condition of state for or an obstruction with, we went to the book on synonyms and we found the quantum word to replace that. You don't have you can use the word damage instead of injury, security instead of property.
Okay, so now...
You have value... Or you can have a claim. Gold miners filed claims. When you sign an autograph, it's AU because you're the author of the autograph because you have authorization to make it authentic. All those four words start with AU. And what's the symbol for gold on a periodic table?
AU.
AU.
Exactly.
Which means value. And he who holds the gold makes the rules.
That's interesting. So that's... And you got me into another subject now. So what about the periodic table of elements with all their symbols? Obviously, each one has a meaning, doesn't it?
Somebody has an agenda, yes. Some of them just represent the abbreviation of the word.
Yeah.
And others, they have an agenda.
How about silver? Silver is just SI, right? Platinum, gold, the valuable one. Iron, FE. You know, that's interesting.
Iron is
that. You can go anywhere with this. You know, these teachings are pretty amazing. I see how it's deep down into science now. I'm starting to learn more. I guess I'm your newest student here, which I enjoy. I don't get many teachers these days.
If in order to have jurisdiction, you must advertise.
Yeah. I have a question. Now, going back, now let's say somebody's not in prison yet. But they're out on bond. They've given their bodies up to state, you know, and they're on their way to prison. But they're not on bond. How do they get rid of the contract of the bail bond without going to jail by jumping bond? You know, as they call it. What does the person do?
The result of the bond is you now sue under Title 18, Section 1341, mail fraud banking.
And who do you sue? You don't sue the bondsman. You sue the court.
You would sue the bondsman for fraudulently conveying language to create a false bond and false security under the security laws. But then the security laws are written in adverb verb. And where are you going to challenge a security law? in the state of California, vessel in dry dock under a yellow fringe flag of a foreign government, better known as the fiction verb California.
Okay, which we talked about
last week. So the fiction verb California is going to support the adverb verb law and support the verb. But if you sue, you have to create a new jurisdiction of quantum language. So by having a contract with the court in quantum language, the courtroom is supposed to be a auditorium. Under the federal law of what's called the law of the auditorium, a Title IV flag, 1 to 1.9, which is a free contract flag, must be flown in an auditorium at the time of a trial or discussion.
Is that a flag flown without the yellow fringe or with the yellow fringe on the border?
With the yellow fringe means it's a military court under Army Regulations 840-10, Chapter 2-3, Subsection 6.
Okay, now.
And,
okay. Because I remember talking about
because you're in a military court, you're a private citizen, so you're not in the military.
Right. So that doesn't work. That flag is invalid, I guess.
That is true, but if you walk in and you give it credibility, like we always wear a Title IV flag on our left lapel to symbolize the fact that we are a citizen of the United States of our world corporation. We were in this one trial in Los Angeles County there, and it was for an insurance claim of $36,000 due to an automobile accident. And the insurance company lawyer says to the judge, how come she gets to use her flag and we don't get to use our flag, which means the yellow fringe flag? the judge suspended the license of the attorney for acknowledging the Title IV flag and putting down the fiction flag of four colors. That, in other words, he brought to the attention of the fact that the court was under a foreign flag. Here in Wisconsin, especially in Milwaukee and Waukesha County, because I live here and I participate in these courts, they have Title IV 1 to 1.9 flags. They do not have a spear, an eagle, a ball, an acorn, or a yellow braid on the flag because they are a contract flag, and they don't want me walking into court charging them with treason for creating a state within the state of Wisconsin, which is in perjury of the oath under Title 18, 16, 21. Which carries a 5-year prison sentence, I might add.
So you mean that Wisconsin changed their flag?
Yes.
That's
you know, the Wisconsin of the 50 states is the only state that doesn't require insurance because in means no of surety. How can you buy a negative condition of contract?
Yeah,
now,
that's
an insurance company
is
should
anyway.
Be,
to me, it really is, you know.
Well,
I have another question.
Moron. Automobile, it should be automobile security insurance. It should be automobile security, plural.
Yeah.
You should be buying securities for your functioning.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Okay, now, in Wisconsin, though, and all 50 states have this, you must prove financial responsibility.
Exactly, especially here in California. They can take
okay, now, if you don't want to buy the insurance in the fiction, then you have to prove that you're worth at least $50,000 in security.
Exactly, that's what California says.
Right.
Otherwise,
all 50 states have
the
same rule.
If you're for a speeding ticket and you don't produce insurance, they can legally impound your car on the spot. And you have a perfect driving record. It doesn't matter.
Right.
I have another question for you now. I don't believe in drinking and driving, but
neither do I.
Under the influence, that's a big trap. It's a big money pit out here in California. If a person gets, the limit is .08. People get pulled over .03, and the cop says, well, you're under the influence, and now you got to prove, you might as well be .08 or .1, but you're only .03, which is within the legal limit, but they still get you, cite you for under the influence, and you have to have a major defense. How does that
work? Okay, now, here's another one.
Yeah.
Now, let's say I made you stay awake for 100 hours without sleep.
Right.
And then I put you behind the wheel of a car, and I said, well, I want you to drive from L.A. to San Francisco after you've gone 100 hours without sleep.
Right.
You would be worse than a 2.0 drunk.
Oh, I wouldn't get 5 seconds down the road.
Right, and you'd fall asleep behind a wheel and kill somebody.
Right.
Okay, now that's under the influence of fatigue. That's what it means. It means anything, any impairment, You could have, you could be taking codeine-laced drugs. You could
right,
be taking they
get you for that out
drugs.
Here.
You could be going without sleep. Anything that, that puts you in a condition of not 100% performance when you get behind the wheel of a car, you are under the influence.
Exactly.
That's why they say we arrest people for under the influence. Now, if you've gone 36 hours without sleep and you had one drink, one beer, 0.03,
right.
You would be legally drunk.
Right, exactly.
Because you would
totally.
Be under the influence of fatigue and you're going to fall asleep behind the wheel. And a police officer can look at that and say, that person is under the influence. I don't know what the influence is. And we can blood test the guy, and his blood test will show that his fatigue level, because the more tired you get, the higher the amino acids get in your blood.
Right.
And they can chemically make determinations. This guy's totally burned out. If we set him still for 5 minutes, he'll be sitting there unconscious. We could lean him up against the corner of a wall.
Yeah.
He'd be fall asleep standing up. He's still tired. So putting him behind the wheel of a car, the same rules apply. Well, look at semi-drivers. They used to drive until they ran off the road, and you always saw semis on fire in the medium strips or going off.
Many times.
As you drive down the highway, you see all these big semi-tires all over the tracks where cars where the semis have gone off the road. Those guys were under the influence of fatigue.
So
they passed a law that says you can't drive. When you hit that 8-hour mark, you're going to pull over. I don't care where you're going to pull over, but you're going to get off the highway for 16 hours and get some rest.
So that becomes a legitimate complaint on the state's part.
That's right. When you got 80 tons rolling down the road with the guided missile brain being falling asleep behind it, you got a runaway bomb that's going to kill somebody.
Okay. So that's a legitimate complaint.
That's right. And you know what? They can't sort out the under the influence alcohol from the drugs from the fatigue, so they just passed the law under the influence, and it's legitimate.
That's what they've done in California. And it is. They use it all the time out here.
Now, here's another one. The law is written in adverb verb. The
yeah.
traffic citation of California has 400 mistakes on it.
I believe that.
And you know what the district attorney said to us? He goes, why should we let a person go free that has committed a crime just because we don't have the language right? My argument to him back was, get the language right. Learn how to read and write. Stop being lazy and do your job. You know what the judge ruled? He said, your case is dismissed. When you can read and write, you can come back to court. And adjourn.
That's great. Well, I'll tell you what, we had some fun tonight. I think we should probably wind this down because we got another show that we pushed off for 30 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But that's okay because last week we were going to do this, and so Don gave me an extra half an hour tonight to make
we
up
We can
for
go
it.
Ahead.
Don, are you there?
Yeah, we can go ahead.
Somebody might be there in the background.
Yes, you can go ahead.
If
you can
not,
go ahead.
We'll just keep going.
Yeah, you can go ahead for about another 30 minutes.
Okay, let's go on. Do you want to go on, Judge? Let's go some more. Is that okay?
You know, I did this live TV show for the state of Texas.
Yeah.
I was at the University of Texas. This was in 19 when was that show? That was 1998, I believe it was. And I took the seal, great seal of Texas, and I said, "It's the state of Texas. State is a pronoun. I was an adverb modifying the verb Texas." And I went into much of what our program was right now. Now, this was only supposed to be a 20-minute program.
Right.
They canceled the next 2 hours of programming, and I talked for 2 hours and 20 minutes on live network television with no commercials.
I love it.
The people that were flocking to the radio station from all over the city of Houston had the traffic backed up for 6 weeks, the 6 blocks. There was standing room only in the parking lot as well as in the TV studio waiting to meet with me. Because many of them had grievances they wanted me to solve because of the massive fake in language. When I did the radio show for Hal Macy in Salt Lake City, Utah,
right,
between 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock in the morning,
right,
12,000 cars pulled over on the expressway and it brought the city of Salt Lake City to a standstill for 2 hours during rush hour. Because people were yelling out of the windows at each other, you know, pull over, turn on this radio station, and take notes of how to read and write in the truth. and how to sue for corrections and the wrongs that are taking place in our city.
Well, you know, I've been a freedom fighter now for 31 years or longer, and I've gone around. I was at the National Health Federation. We got vitamins legalized so that the FDA and the doctors couldn't control it. And I've done a lot of fighting on many different fronts, but I think that the language, being it's the communicative methodology from citizen to citizen, person to person, does have the highest yield of power. And since I've met you, I think that you can do more in 20 minutes than I did in 30 years.
Okay, now here's a little here's a little tip for all those patriots out there that want to that are trying to chase the word sovereignty.
Yeah, that's big. That's the big one. Now we're in
okay.
Court.
Ladies and gentlemen, the word sovereignty means you are one. O-N-E, the number one. Okay, now if you're one, that means you don't have a contract with anybody. If you have a dollar bill in your pocket, it means you have a contract with the post office and you're a postal employee, because under usury, you're now entered into a contract of commerce. So therefore, your sovereignty issue is mute. A sovereign person is a nude person in the middle of the ocean, part of the food chain. Have fun trying to get to the grocery store before you get eaten by some friendly neighborhood shark. And that's your bottom line on the word sovereign. Now, if you are a person, the word person means corporate. So the person is going to be talking to a second person.
A person means
either going to be person. D-E-R-S-O-N.
Means corporate.
And when two or more persons get together, they're called people.
Okay.
And people are called citizens of a community. And they own property, they have licenses, so that they can control the level of education. Those that have the level of education to take responsibility have a license for it. Those that do not have a level of education for that position do not have a license. I'm not going to have a six-year-old wire my house with electricity. He doesn't have an education. He doesn't have a license. And he's going to kill somebody if he makes an attempt at trying to wire my house or do plumbing
and
contaminate the water supply.
Right.
So there are rules and regulations. My only position here is, if the government is going to write a constitution, it's going to write laws, rules, codes, regulations, write them in quantum language so that there is no argument as to how, what it means or what the translation of it means, so that you have in the truth - communication. Enforcement, not enforcement, but forcement. They got you using the word enforcement, which means no force, because you have no law, because
law
you're incorporated, no corporation, no joinder. Everything is about the plausible deniability factor. It says stop. It says don't walk. It says no parking. No is an adverb, modifies the verb parking. Is parking
nothing.
A verb or a fact? It's a fact because it's a condition of state. But they make it a verb on your sign. So you walk in the court and you say, Your Honor, I'd like to see the verb parking so I can participate, because I've never seen a verb parking. And your judge has to say, show me the fact parking so I can participate with the fact law. And the judge has to vacate because you're trying to participate in the fact and he doesn't have it. If every single person tomorrow walked into the court system, state and federal, and said, I want to see the law written in the truth and vacate your position, there'd be a whole lot of innocent people going home.
Vacating your position. Okay. So in other words, if I have it, just so I can understand, I'm a very basic person. I just got a parking ticket. How am I going to beat that? So,
Your Honor, I was parking at this location. I want to see the law written in the truth for my parking my vehicle so I can participate, because if I go ahead and I participate in fictitious language, if your law is written in adverb verb, then I'm participating in fiction language to enter into commerce. Commerce means that I'm in banking. If I'm going to use bank fraud and enter into fraudulent conveyance of language under Title 18, 1001, and Title 18, 1341, mail fraud banking, I'm facing 30 years in prison and a $1 million fine. And if you're going to allow this, then I have to name you as my co-conspirator under Title 18, Section 241 for conspiracy, and Title 18, 16, 21 for perjury, because as a judge, you're supposed to be protecting me as a citizen of the community, and in fact, you're damaging me. I'm being damaged by your negligence, by your lack of knowledge.
I think I want to get a parking ticket and just go try this out. Have you got that on your website, how to beat a parking ticket? I love it.
I used to have we used to have like 35 of the 50 states, their parking tickets up on the website.
Yeah.
The average parking citation, the average citation written by all 50 states has over 400 mistakes on it.
Yeah, well, that's really good.
So if you take the citation back to the court within 72 hours under the 3-day rule of Lemon Law and say, I want the citation written in the truth or vacate the citation, they have to vacate because they don't have any truthful language. And no one, a judge and attorney are absolutely forbidden to use any fact because all the government got to be where it's at because it killed the native Indians that were here, and under the laws of ailing, A-I-L-I-N-G, they're corrupt from the beginning, therefore their corruption is a lie. Therefore, all things that follow must be in a lie also, so the continuance of evidence of the lie is never broken.
Wow.
You know, liars among, honor among thieves?
Yeah, I know that one. I just
okay.
love it.
Well, that's what the government is, honor among thieves.
Yeah, and
I support my government. I try to force my government in every way to pay my taxes in the truth, to obey the laws in the truth.
Yeah, the government breaks more laws than we do. They really do. So, what could you talk a little bit about? This is another area that's a sore point with me. I spent a lot of time in Dulce, New Mexico, which was an alien nation, and they had extraterrestrials, grays, lodged in Archuleta Mesa. And I guess because it was a legal place, because it was an alien nation, we as a people couldn't do anything about it. And I saw the Indians, American Indians get their rights violated in my simple way of seeing it all over this country. Because
how do you spell the word
Indian?
Nation,
so they should be left alone.
How do you spell the word Indian?
Can't leave them alone.
IND, no contract?
Okay, go ahead.
In means no, IN. DI is original.
Okay, so
original,
that's
what the word Indian means.
Non-original?
Yeah, non-original.
So,
the government created words.
In the first place.
When you break them down by syllables and then translate them into Latin and Greek, give you the true meaning of what the words were and how they're used. They can add all the twists they want, but every definition in Webster's dictionary is written in adverb verb.
So
my technology puts the missing words in.
So what does that do to the treaties that they have? Violates all of them?
There has never been a quantum language treaty written for any Indian or Eskimo tribe in the United States.
So, therefore, an Indian, how would that relay their reservation in relationship? What would the Indian reservation have in relationship to the United States territory, or whatever the hell you'd call it at this point? What would be the relationship between the two in truth, in fact, in law? Would they just...
All right, the word reservation, re means no, of servation, which is, in other words, you have a closed area of servation, comes from survey, but it means if you have negative condition of a survey, then you have no contract. So the word reservation means a no contract area. The Indians still own what they owned back in 1800.
Which would be most of this country.
Exactly. But you can't, the United States, by giving them a contract written in adverb verb, was actually a no contract. It was an illusion.
Wow. You know, if the Indians started hanging out with you, I think it would be a little scary for this government.
Well, I've been working with 12 separate Indian tribes across the United States, and 3 of the tribes have made me chiefs in the tribe.
Wow.
I worked in Canada with the Stolo and it was the Stolo tribe and the
a northern tribe?
Yeah, these two tribes control about 90% of all the Indians up in Canada.
Okay.
It's been about 4 years since I was up there. But Canada wanted the Indians to go to the polls and vote on this 9-point referendum. Well, when I corrected it, what it was doing in fiction language was giving, by just the fact that they went to the polls and voted, giving the Canadian government jurisdiction over gold, silver, oil, natural gas, and fishing rights that the Indians control west of the Rocky Mountains, throughout the entire Rocky Mountains. Well, as a result of all the tribes, the 152 tribes of Canada being notified that they were going to be hoodwinked by the Canadian government, and nobody showed up for the election. So the Canadian Indians are very suspicious now of anything that the adverb verb Canadian government creates. And the word Canada means sheep.
Sheep?
Sheep, S-H-E-E-P.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, C is an independent letter. The A-N and A-D are connected if you look at the money. They always connect those two letters. That's called a long dash. So you have C, long dash, A. And then you drop the long dashes, and C-A is what it spells. And that's Latin for sheep. Yep. And when you do a sheep, you fleece them. You never kill the sheep. You fleece the sheep. That's
right.
Why they have a...
That's exactly right. That's what they do. That's what they do down here, too, though.
Well, A means no. M-A-R-I is mercy. And C-A is Latin for sheep. No mercy for the sheep. That's what America means.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Wow.
Remember, I told you, when a vowel starts a word and it's used as a single syllable, it means no.
Okay.
Well, if you have a negative condition, you have no contract.
Right. So it takes me a little while. I'm a little slow. I'm going to be one of your slower students. But I guarantee you, when I learn this, I'll be a very effective one.
We have a caller?
Yeah.
We have a caller. You want to take a caller?
Sure.
Got it. I'll put him on.
Okay, Judson. Go ahead.
Hello, caller.
Anybody there? I'm here.
Okay, Dr. Fred. This is Scott Malloy from Australia. How are you going?
Australia. Very good. I get a lot of students in Australia.
You remember me from your seminar?
Yeah, so what's your question, Scott?
I got a question about tax in Australia, whether it's legal.
Whether taxes in Australia are legal?
Yeah, yep.
Well, the tax, in order to be legal, would have to be written with a correct sentence structure. Now, if you go ahead and you challenge, or you know how, if you get on my website, you study the use of language and how language is supposed to be created to write a true sentence, and then you look at the revenue code of Australia, you're going to find that there's not a single legal sentence in the entire Australian revenue code. If you don't have a single legal sentence, then how can you possibly pay your tax? What is the rules and regulations of payer tax? If you take your revenue codes and you put them on trial and say, show me the law written in truth or vacate your position, they're going to have to rewrite the codes if they want to attempt to collect taxes. By the way, I am banned from going to Australia. In 2000, I went to Australia and I was put under house arrest while I was transferring planes because I'm not allowed in your country. Because of my language, disqualifies everything that Australia does from the government standpoint. So they don't want me teaching any seminars there.
You know, I've heard that our tax is illegal because something to do with the monarchy as well. Like, we're no longer under the monarchy.
I can't hear my mind. You're repeated.
Yeah, Don, can you repeat what Scott's saying? I'm having trouble hearing him, too.
Yep, can you hear me now?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Speak a little louder, Scott.
Okay. I heard that it is illegal in one sense because of we're not a part of the monarchy anymore because we became independent back in 1900. I think that's the reason. Another reason.
The British Magna Carta was vacated because it's written in adverb verb. The British government, who was settled in Australia, never had an in the truth contract for Australia. And the only thing you have to do to prove your argument is to put their language on trial. The procedures of language, not what it says, the procedures of how they use the words, which will vacate their contract and show that Australia is, in fact, a sovereign sovereign continent, sovereign nation. And whoever writes the contracts in the quantum language first is going to be the one to stand up and make a declaration for the flag your Bill of Rights and how the how to communicate the rules and regulations to people. In the year 2000 and 2001 and 2002, for 3 years, I worked with the Hawaiian people to write a constitution in quantum language, and we filed that at the World Court of The Hague, and The Hague ruled that the indigenous people of Hawaii are in fact sovereign, and that the United States invaded the island in 1893, that they are still to this day sovereign people and have a constitution written in quantum, and so therefore they are a free, independent people. And this week in Congress, Congress is addressing that constitution now.
This week?
Yes, this week Congress is addressing, it was up on the internet.
Wow.
The Hawaiian senator from Hawaii has the Hawaiian Constitution in quantum language in front of Congress for the indigenous people of Hawaii that they never went to war with the United States. The United States invaded the island, but the 185,000 Hawaiians that live there today are in fact sovereign from the United States and not part of the United States.
You know, I must say, this is incredible, incredible information.
We have a constitution already written for you to adapt. The only thing you have to do is take the word Hawaiian out and put the word Australia in.
And that's on your website?
I used to have it. There might be one up there. Usually when you put something up on the internet, it stays in somebody copies it and keeps it up there. There's several different constitutions that I've written. I'm currently working on a 280-paragraph constitution for the United States, but it's going to be generic for any country in the world that wishes to adapt it, and that will be placed on my website.
And we need to start a movement and get that put in place. We need to start a movement.
Ratified is the word you're looking
Ratified,
for.
Ratified, yeah. We should do this on BBS Radio as a project.
Well, BBS Radio's got a huge following all over the world.
Yeah. Yeah, have you got students?
I've got a question just before I go.
Okay.
Who would you recommend, how would I go about finding somebody, a lawyer, or somebody to, or some way of, defending myself, with your knowledge?
In your country?
There's a group of people in Brisbane. And as well as in Sydney, Australia. I've got about 280 active students in Brisbane and in Sydney. And if you run an ad in the paper, if you're a David Wynn Miller law student, please contact me in the personals. I'm sure that one of my students would find it and put you in contact with the support group down there.
And have you heard of natural law?
Metro law?
Yeah, there's some
metro
movement.
Metro is just another word
Australia.
For city or county or state. Just another term of where citizens come together and they create laws for their community. It's under corporation structure.
And how do you suggest that the Americans get back their rights after 9/11 and the Patriot Act?
The people who are putting that through right now are afraid of security issues. And there's only so many hours in a day for me to address certain issues.
Well,
so we're
going to
work on the
90 days, right?
First,
discussed
put
on
the
our
idea
last week
of what how to write contracts on the table first.
Yeah. So that's what they're doing, Judge Miller, is they're ratifying that every 90 days to keep that Patriot Act in full force, or is it starting to fall by the wayside in increments?
No, didn't you just hear Bush showed up in Iraq?
Yeah, I know that.
You know why he did that?
Why?
He had to leave the United States, so the vice president would now be sworn as the new president to establish a 90-day rule of martial law.
Touche.
Every 90 days, the President of the United States has to leave the United States.
You're right. Brought this up last week, and it happened after our last show.
Right.
And you said it was going
to
happen.
The United States,
to what you're
so that
here.
The vice president can go ahead and be sworn as the president and declare martial law for 90 days.
Then you brought this up last Saturday night. You brought this
right.
up. And,
sure if
enough,
you look at
the
history, since Bush has taken
was.
Office every 90 days
yeah.
since February 2nd, 2000, we have been playing leapfrog of a new president every 90 days.
Yeah, you're totally, totally right. My God, I can't even listen, remember my own shows. Yeah, and you told me this was going to happen. You announced it last week. Yeah, that's amazing.
Hey, they do it now. It's called trust law. T-R-U-S-T law. Study the rules and regulations of how a trust functions. Study the rules and regulations of how laws become law in federal government. A federal law does not take effect for 90 days.
Yeah.
So every 90 days, whatever law they want to create has to play in, go into a leapfrog effect, and then the law is only good for an emergency 90-day effect. So the leapfrog has to, there's hundreds of these laws that are running simultaneously. If the president signs and then leapfrogs for the next 90 days, and so he has to leave the country or he has to be put to sleep for some surgery, so the vice president can be sworn in, and then
I remember that a couple of presidents
leave exactly. the country.
Yeah,
to put the jurisdiction back in the president.
Right, I remember that. What
he even did it on commander in chief with the lady president, where she had to be put to sleep for surgery, and the vice president, the speaker of the house.
I remember that very
because
well
because she didn't have a vice president. The speaker of the house got sworn in for one day, and of course he broke the strike with the airlines
yeah.
and got a taste of power, and then she comes back in and you know, he has a totally alien policy to hers. The
yeah,
point is that they the government just did it, so they had to put it on NBC or on TV.
Right,
so that
I remember.
The public could see exactly what happened.
Yeah, well, you know what? You're spreading this whole new consciousness out there to our audience at BBS Radio Land and around the world. And I think it's really wonderful that we're getting this whole insight rather than from government cover-ups and politics. We're getting it from language. It's so clear when you bring the language into it. It's just incredible. We just thank you for being on our show and bringing
this out.
This is waking me up. You know?
The tapes we talked about, this two-hour show we did tonight, you could send this show as is to your BBC radio stations or your sister radio or Republic Radio or Christian Radio. They'll put that up because I've done over 300 shows for these people. And they love this technology.
Well, it's true.
It's very generic.
Clear
it insults nobody.
Yeah.
Everybody uses language for 100% of all topics that they touch. So if you got the language wrong, you got a screwed up life.
Yeah, it's true. I think I've had a screwed-up life now for 63 years. While I met you, I was starting to get some clarification here, thank God, you know. Took me a long time to find Judge Miller, but I'm glad
I
did. Usually
people wake up at the age of 40 and they roll over and say, we're not in Kansas, Toto.
Yeah.
And then they join my organization. 95% of all my students worldwide are over the age of 40.
Yeah, I believe it. You know that we always say the brave takes the hard path, and once you've been defeated many times like a 40-year-old has and gotten really nowhere, then it's time to look around for an alternate solution, you know. Wisdom sets in at some point.
And when people see that it was the simplest of all things.
Yeah, it is.
That's
what you learn when you're 3 or 4 years old, the language. Unfortunately, it's not correct.
Well, you know, bear with me. You know what I was going to say is, if you'd like your own platform here on BBS Radio, we would be honored to offer it to you. I think what you bring is a whole new, wonderful energy to that, to what we're trying to do, and I love it, so please consider it.
Just give me a call. My website is dwmlc.com, and if you get on the website, you'll see my name and address and phone numbers there to contact me.
Okay, well, we will do that. I guess I'll let you close her out.
Okay.
Very good.
Yeah, we got a few more minutes here. Got another 3 or 4 minutes. Judge Miller, it's really an honor to have you on the show. It's an honor to have your honor, and I mean honor with real honor, having you on this show. And I think when you're on here, from what I've seen, this is probably one of the best, these are the best shows, the best two shows we've ever had on this network. And we've had some good ones. So I want you to go back to your daughter and everybody and have a good Father's Day. And I really appreciate you taking Father's Day to come on this show. Is there anything else that you want to close up with, any words of wisdom to your new student and your great gracious audience out there?
Well, one of the things on my website is there's a 7-hour audio link that you can download and listen to. Listen when we put the language on trial. Now, the World Court in The Hague had asked me, no one in history had ever taken the parts of speech of language and put them on trial. Because you hold the patents on the math interface on language, you are probably the best individual to do that. So invite judges, attorneys, and college professors in an open court scenario and hold court, which I did in Las Vegas, Nevada. Because it's very easy to get there from all over the world, and the airline tickets to Vegas are probably cheaper than any place else.
It's a great fun zone for the family.
Yeah, and when these gentlemen showed up, they went ahead and they asked questions for 7 hours. And they made their arguments and their fiction, and I defeated them with the truth.
7 hours of war. That's pretty good.
You know, I also, in 1999, I held a theology seminar in Indianapolis, Indiana, for 47 ministers from 16 different religions.
Wow.
For 14 hours. And when they left that seminar, they learned about religion, or shall I say the word faith, from a mathematical interface of communication. And all 16 different religions now understood that they were the same religion.
That's very honorable. I have never seen, you know, religions agree on anything. But they're always...
You know what? All 16 of them, I started off with this 3 + 3 = 6, and they all agreed with it. And I says, now, show me the God, the Christ, the Muhammad.
Yeah,
she says,
an adverb
modifying the verb. I says, God's not a verb. Muhammad's not a verb. Christ's not a verb. And they all looked at each other, and I says, why did you put a verb, an adverb, in front of the name of your church all over the country in millions of churches? And they, you know what? They didn't have an answer for that. He says, because we always did it that way. They never once thought of the procedures of language, that they were taking an article or a preposition and turning it into an adverb, which means no contract, and now modifying the title of their God or the name of their God or the name of their church into a verb fiction. And then every single church had a yellow fringe flag inside of it, which meant they were in commerce with the IRS as a 501c3 church.
Exactly what they don't want. Church and state.
And every church
married,
that I made that aware to, I've been ordered off the premises or sued for trespassing.
Wow.
Now, how is that for the last 7 churches?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And that's not just here in the United States. I did that in Indiana. I did it in Illinois, in Atlanta, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Los Angeles, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You know, every church has the same response. They act like a deer in the headlights, and you get out of my church or I'll sue you for trespassing.
Yeah, I can relate. Now, what would happen if we took you over to Iraq? and I know you know Arabic, but how would we do with the Shiites and the Muslims? Could we get them to compromise their values a little bit?
How does the verb Shiite and the verb Muslim go ahead and argue with each other and say nothing?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Say nothing with each other. You ask them what business they're in. They say, we're in the business of mind control. If we don't control your mind, we put a bullet in it.
Yeah, exactly. Hello. That's exactly
right. If they learn how to speak in quantum language, they would now have a vehicle to communicate with each other.
Right. Well, hopefully that'll be the next lesson. I know you're helping the Bush people.
I'm available.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. All right, I guess the show's over. 59. And we thank you, Judge David Wynn Miller, for being a guest, and we'd like to have you on here again in the near future.
All right. I'll talk to you later next week, and we'll set up another time.
Yeah, we'll set up another time, that's for sure. This has been, you've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, and We are very glad for all the listeners out there that make this one of the most successful shows on the internet. And I will turn this over, the show back over to Central Control, which would be Doug and Don Newsom.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.